Good morning. Welcome to the regular meeting of the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, Lahontan Region. My name is Pete Pumphrey. I'm from Chalfont, California, and I am the board chair. I want to thank you very much for coming to our meeting. We welcome your comments, ideas, and participation because they help us to do a better job. At this time, I would like to introduce the other members of the regional board. Don Jardine, our vice chair from Markleyville. Dr. Amy Horn from Truckee. Eric Sandell from Truckee. And from our Victorville office on the big screen over here to my right, Kimberly Cox from Hellendale and Keith Diaz from Rosamond. Our executive officer is Patty Kuyumjin. Ms. Kuyumjin, would you please introduce the staff who are with us?
Yes, and good morning, everyone. With us today, we have Lori Kemper, who is our assistant executive officer. To my left is Elizabeth Barrett, our legal counsel, Kathy Odermont, your board clerk, and Michelle Avila, who's assisting her as board clerk this morning. Again, back to our audience, we have Scott Ferguson, our division manager. We have Patrice Copeland, our other division manager from the Victorville office. We have Kathy Poole. We have Lori Scribe, who you'll hear from a little bit later, Ann Holden, Mary Fiore Wagner, Jeff Brooks, our newest employee. Welcome, Jeff. We have Jay Cass, who you'll also be hearing from later, Eric Taxer, Mr. Rob Tucker in the back. Alan Miller just recently joined us. And if I could shift to the Victorville office, we have Rebecca Phillips in our Victorville office in the audience, and she's helping run the system down there. Oh, wrong way for a cameo.
There we go.
And we do have an audience here. And one of the audience members, David Alanese from County San Bernardino Public Health, is recording the meeting from this end. I just wanted you to know that.
Thank you. The regional board will be conducting many items during this meeting. Please feel free to comment on any item so that our decision will be based on all available information. If you wish to speak on an agenda item, please fill out the orange card that looks like this in the back of the room and hand the card to Kathy Odermatt, our board clerk. Please respect the board members, staff, presenters, and your fellow citizens. Everyone's views should be heard. If a lot of people wish to speak, I may place time limits on presentations. If you have any written materials as part of the agenda item, please hand copies to Kathy Odermatt, and she will distribute them. So that we can have an accurate administrative record, please speak after I call your name and invite you to come to the lectern. When you come to the lectern, please speak loudly and clearly so that the folks in Victorville will be able to hear what you have to say. Please communicate your ideas clearly and efficiently. And that actually, the admonition to speak loudly really goes for all of us so that we can make sure that the folks in Victorville can follow along. First item on this morning's agenda is item 5 in the overall agenda, which is public forum. Any person may address the water board regarding a matter within the water board's jurisdictions that is not related to an item on this meeting agenda or currently pending before the water board. I have one card for that, which I've lost already. Sarah Green.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Sarah Green. Excellent. Good morning. Sarah Green, Executive Director of the Alpine Watershed Group. And I just want to thank the board again for the approval of our project, the Hope Valley Aquatic Habitat and Meadow Restoration Project planning phase through the Squaw Settlement funding back in November. We're still in the midst of the contracting process with the state board, and we are very hopeful that that process will be completed within the next couple months so that we can get that project planning process started this summer. But your staff has been very helpful, specifically Eric Taxer and Lori Kemper for helping move it through. Just a brief update about that. So we'll keep you informed as the project gets started. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions, Ms. Cox?
No questions. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Diaz?
No questions.
Mr. Sandell?
No questions.
Dr. Horn?
No, thank you.
Mr. Jardine?
No questions.
I have no questions. I'm glad things are moving along. Thank you very much. Item 6 on the agenda is a public hearing for consideration of renewing an NPDES permit for the Mojave Fish Hatchery, San Bernardino County. The California Regional Water Control Board, Lahontan Region, will consider adopting an updated version of the current NPDES permit for the Mojave River Fish Hatchery. The permit is intended to address site-specific water quality issues and implementation issues identified by the Water Board staff and California Department of Fish and Wildlife during the current permit's term. I'd like to start by asking if there is anyone who wishes to present as evidence or testimony relevant to this order. There being no one, it's my understanding that there are some corrections that we need to be cognizant of. But what I would propose is that we submit the matter for the record on the agenda packet, and then receive the proposed corrections. And then I would close the hearing, and the board could then proceed with deliberation, if that's agreeable to the other members of the board.
That's fine.
Thank you. Mr. Taxer?
Gracious good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. My name is Eric Taxer, Water Resource Control Engineer in your Lake Tahoe office. The first change I'd like to reference is that we recommend deleting the first full paragraph on page...
Eric, I'm sorry to interrupt. Could you speak louder? We have a room full here and it's hard to hear you.
I'll do my best. Dealing with a little bronchitis at the moment. But our first recommendation is to delete the first full paragraph on attachment F8. It's Bates stamp page 6-060. And it's a reference to the March 29th, 2013 Water Board staff inspection. We recommend that that be deleted because of inconsistencies and with that inspection report and whether that actually truly represents violations. And then we have four typos to correct. First is table E3, page E4, Bates stamp page 6-045. For the PVP iodine row on that table, we request that we add a footnote number 9 to the required analytical test method column. The iodine test is typically conducted in the field, and adding footnote 9 will acknowledge this. The next typo is on attachment F, page 30, Bates stamp page 6-082. The fourth full paragraph, beginning with the statement, the facility has two settling ponds. The second sentence in that paragraph should read, the volume of each settling pond at 18,200 square feet by 14 feet, blah, 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 is 254,800 cubic feet or 1,906,036 gallons. There is a typo where we actually wrote 1,006,036 gallons. And that same correction is to be made on page, attachment F, page 32, Bates stamp, page 6-084. It's located in the second full paragraph beginning with a sentence, the facility has two settling ponds. So if we could please make that same correction. And then the final typo is on attachment F, page 49, Bates stamp page 6-101, section 7A1A, In the first line, we need to delete the hyphen preceding the pH and add the word and before the word temperature. So those are the only typos. And I would like to add that the our initial response to the influent monitoring requirements for boron, chloride, sulfite, TDS, etc., referenced in our water quality exceedance, or it did reference our potential exceedances of water quality objectives. And this is in response to comments from that we received from Fish and Wildlife. I would just want to note that in those water quality exceedances, those are exceedances discovered by our swamp monitoring program, and they are representative of samples collected from the surface water of the Mojave River located at the Upper Narrows, and they do not represent the effluent water quality from the facility. So I just want to make that clarification so that it's on the record. And yes, I do know the difference between a fish and a mammal, but I just like this picture. So are there any questions?
Any questions, Ms. Cox?
No questions, Chair.
Mr. Dias?
No, thank you.
Mr. Sandell?
No questions.
Dr. Horn?
No, thank you.
Mr. Jardine?
No, thank you.
I have no questions. Thank you. I would entertain a motion with regard to this.
I'll move that we adopt the order with the late corrections.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion?
Could I make a comment?
Of course.
I just wanted to tell Fish and Wildlife Department that we appreciate the close reading you've done of these many pages and the corrections that you found. Really appreciate your hard work on this, and the Lahontan staff as well. Thank you.
I think we're ready to roll call.
Dr. Horn?
Aye.
Mr. Jardine?
Aye.
Mr. Sandell?
Yes.
Ms. Cox?
Aye.
Mr. Dias?
Aye.
And Chair Pumphrey?
Aye. I do have a speaker card on this item, which is not a request for testimony from Terry Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and board members. I am Terry Jackson. I am the statewide MPDES coordinator for Fish and Wildlife. I am the one-man program for all 23 state facilities. So I deal with all of the regional water boards that each of our facilities are in. So I get the pleasure of reading all of these permits when they come across, and they look something like this every time I go through them and read them with a fine-tooth comb. But I thank you so much for an opportunity to speak real quick. Interestingly, this permit was the 2011 permit was my very first permit when they hired me 6 years ago. I was absolutely clueless as what it was. I'm a fish biologist by original training and, of course, have all the background for water quality and stuff like that in my education, but had never put it to application. And sometimes as I read through the old permit, I was like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe that went. Some of the stuff that went through. So I very much appreciate, you know, how the water boards worked through this with us. Because the Mojave Hatchery was originally built in 1947. And you look at pictures, it was before, I think, there was actually even a Victorville. It was just kind of like somebody had a Victorville, and then out in the middle of the desert, for some reason, they put a hatchery. And there's absolutely no college, no people, no nothing. The Mojave River actually used to run down past the hatchery. So it's quite a few things have changed since the hatchery was originally built. But mostly I'd like to just acknowledge this is a much improved permit. I really appreciate the efforts of the water board to evaluate the natural conditions of the watershed and look at the data that was there and to realize that we are just there doing, you know, we raise fish primarily. So it's actually been a pleasure in my 6 years. I've gotten a chance to work with Ms. Kemper. It's been a pleasure working with her as well as with Scott Ferguson and poor Jay Cass, who has had to deal with me in the past out of the Victorville office. As they know, I'm kind of a
a stickler for data and a stickler for specifics, which is why I read these things, and I can definitely be a pain in the butt. But because I deal with all the facilities and I read all the permits, I constantly look for consistency between the regional water boards and what the state water board says, and so, and also within the permits within the Lahontan board. But in particular, I'd like to thank Kathy Poole and Eric Taxer, as new to MPDS and had to deal with me being extremely particular, and they were very patient with me and vice versa. So I just want to thank all of you for a good permit. Thank you for the working effort. Thank you for the developing a relationship, because I know at one point Fish and Game probably wasn't looked at as, you know, it was all new. The MPDS was a new thing, and we had a lot of people that said, well, what's the point? We raise fish. We don't need to worry about the water quality. We know we have clean water because our fish are alive. And but we are a resource agency, and obviously we look beyond just the raising of fish. We do look beyond where we're planting our fish, and we want to make sure that all the aquatic species are doing well as the wildlife, et cetera, and the people. And so we are very diligent as a resource agency. And so we thank you again for this permit, and thank you, Water Board staff, for working with me. That's all. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jackson. Any questions or comments, Ms. Cox?
No, Chair. Thank you.
Mr. Dias?
No questions.
Mr. Sandell?
No, thank you.
Mr. Jardine?
No questions.
Dr. Horn?
I appreciate you coming today and your comments. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's always nice when people tell us what a wonderful staff we have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Excuse me. Item 7 on the agenda is an update on development of a non-point source permit for federal lands.
Good morning, Chairman Pumphrey and members of the board. My name is Lori Scribe. I'm an environmental scientist here in the South Lake Tahoe office in our non-point source unit. This is an informational item, so no action will be taken today, but we certainly appreciate any feedback the board has. And I'll mention throughout the presentation a few areas that we would especially like feedback on. Today I'll be talking about the development of a new waste discharge requirement general order for non-point source activities on federal lands. This is kind of a mouthful, so I'll probably refer to this as the federal permit or the non-point source permit throughout the presentation. I just want to briefly mention a few folks that are here in the room today to hear this item that we have from the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management. We have Gabriel Venegas, who's a regional hydrologist out of the U.S. Forest Service Regional Office in Vallejo. And we have Miriam Morrill, the Soil Air Water Program lead from the BLM State Office in Sacramento. We also have Corey Hansen, who is the staff environmental scientist lead on the project from the Central Valley Water Board. We're working in conjunction with the Central Valley Water Board on the development of this permit. So during the presentation, I'll discuss briefly the Water Board's authority to regulate non-point source discharges in California, a little bit of background, history of water quality management on federal lands. Then we'll discuss the development of this permit, and we've looked at two different approaches, a project-by-project approach and a new programmatic approach, which is the approach we suggest moving forward with for developing this permit. And then in summary, I'll give a little summary of where we are now and a timeline of what we expect moving forward. So, the water boards have authorities under both Porter-Cologne Water Quality Control Act and the Federal Clean Water Act. Porter-Cologne requires entities who engage in activities that could discharge waste to obtain waste discharge requirements from a responsible water board. There are several provisions of the Federal Clean Water Act that are applicable to non-point source activities. I'll mention two of those sections here. Section 319, that requires states to develop a non-point source management plan. California met this requirement with adoption of the policy for implementation and enforcement of the non-point source pollution control program, which is also called the non-point source policy. State Board adopted that policy in 2004. And among other things, the non-point source policy requires the water boards to regulate sources of non-point source pollution through permitting authorities provided in Port of Cologne. Section 208, it's pursuant to this section that the State Water Board and the U.S. Forest Service entered into a 1981 management agency agreement. And this agreement directed the Forest Service to address water quality pollution on federal lands using best management practices, or BMPs, identified in its water quality handbook. The MAA is still in place today. However, the adoption of the 2004 non-point source policy changed the relevancy and the adequacy of that MAA. So together, the requirements of Port of Cologne and the Federal Clean Water Act mean that the Water Board has an obligation and the authority to address activities causing non-point source pollution on federal lands within its jurisdiction. A little bit of background. In 2009, the State Water Board signed a resolution that determined that the U.S. Forest Service Water Quality Handbook, originally a part of the MAA, required revision, and the resolution directed State Board staff to begin working on a statewide approach to address non-point source discharges on federal lands. 28 years had passed since signing of the MAA, and both the Forest Service and the Water Boards had had changes in policies and mandates in that time. There were also changes in pollution-causing activities. The use of TMDLs had changed. There were new environmental or endangered species listings, and climate change was also recognized as an important factor in determining water quality and habitat protection requirements. So meanwhile, while the State Board was working on a statewide approach, the North Coast Regional Water Board, or Region 1, had been working on a regional permit for non-point source activities. And in 2010, the North Coast Water Board adopted a waiver of WDRs for non-point source activities on Forest Service lands. In 2015, Region 1 renewed that waiver with the addition of BLM and continues to implement it today.
Excuse me, could I ask you, when you move to a new slide,
yes,
if you could say you're doing that so they can advance it in Victorville?
Oh, okay, I will do that.
I'm sorry,
thank you.
That's my fault. I forgot to,
no problem.
To suggest that earlier.
See, we are on slide number 4. Is Victorville with us on slide 4?
We're with you.
Okay, great, thank you. And I'll be sort of clicking my way through slide 4 here. We're on bullet 3 now. In 2011, the State Board completed development of a statewide non-point source waiver. However, that waiver was not adopted by State Board. There's a few reasons I'll mention why. One was that there was a lack of regional board involvement in development of that permit, yet there was projected to be a significant increase in regional board workload. There were also concerns by multiple stakeholder groups on all sides of the issue around increased cost, access, and the environmental analysis that was completed. Additionally, there were BMPs in the Forest Service Water Quality Handbook that required revision that had not that were not revised before before adoption was proposed. Then in 2014 and 2015, the state and regional boards undertook an effort called the Grazing Regulatory Action Program, or Project, or GRAP, and they held public meetings to assess developing statewide standards for livestock grazing management. This effort proved to be fairly controversial. And in 2015, the State Board signed a resolution discontinuing the discussions and directing the regional boards to take up the issues of grazing management. A copy of that State Board resolution is included as enclosure 1 in your board packet. Specifically, it directed the regional boards to consider taking actions to address livestock grazing operations that cause or have the likelihood to cause water quality impairment based on the unique hydrology, topography, climate, and land use in each region. So in summary, the attempts at a statewide level to regulate activities that generate non-point source pollution were not completed, and the State Board has directed the regional boards to take up the effort. So staff working on this current permitting effort in our region are trying to learn from these past efforts and work collaboratively with our federal partners to develop a permit that's both functional and implementable and protective of water quality. Next slide. We're on slide 5 now, Region 5 and 6 federal permit development. I'm going to talk about the current effort that we're collaborating with the Central Valley Water Board on. And I just want to note that in this presentation, when I say Region 5, I'll be referring to the Central Valley Water Board, Region 6 to the Lahontan Water Board. And I clarify this because the Forest Service in California is also known as Forest Service Region 5, which has gotten a little bit confusing at some of our working group meetings. Next slide. There we go. Let's see. In 2004, the Central Valley Water Board began to engage with the Forest Service under and to develop a non-point source permit for federal agencies. They developed a charter and began holding working group meetings. Then in 2015, the Central Valley Water Board began engaging with the Bureau of Land Management, and a BLM representative began attending their core working group meetings. In early 2016, management in the Lahontan offices directed staff in the Tahoe office to begin working on a non-point source permit for federal agencies. And as we began that effort, we became aware of the Central Valley Water Board's effort and contacted them and began attending their core working group meetings. It became clear to staff in both of the Water Board regions that there could be benefits to collaborating in this process. By collaborating with the Central Valley Water Board, we can reduce the duplication of effort and staff time for all the agencies involved. And in developing a similar permit, we hope to achieve better compliance as many Water Board or as many Forest Service and BLM regions or administrative areas cross our regional board boundaries. We share many national forests and BLM administrative units across the two Water Board regions. So in early 2017, Water Board staff and management met with executives from the BLM and Forest Service to discuss this permitting effort. Some of the goals of that meeting were to brief executive management of the Forest Service and BLM to be sure that they understood the objectives of this permit, the expected process to develop the permit, and to ask them for a commitment of federal staff resources to engage with Water Board staff to develop the permit. Ultimately, the Central Valley and Lahontan Water Boards will each adopt their own permit to account for regional differences such as our basin plans, TMDLs, 303D listings, as well as differences in physical geography. However, our goal is to have the permits be as similar as possible in terms of milestones, objectives, deliverables, and monitoring programs to facilitate implementation and compliance. Next slide, please. This map shows the BLM, the boundaries of the BLM administrative units in shades of brown, and the Central Valley and Lahontan Water Boards in the black outline. The Applegate, Eagle Lake, Mother Lode, Ridgecrest, and Bakersfield field offices or administrative units have lands in both Region 5 and Region 6. The BLM is the largest federal land manager in the Lahontan region, managing approximately 30% of the lands within the Lahontan region. So moving on to the next slide, in Victorville, you may have to click a few times to get to the next slide here that shows the Forest Service, National Forests in California, or at least the ones within our Region 5 and 6 boundaries. So similar to the BLM, there's multiple national forests that overlap both the Lahontan and Central Valley Water Board regions. Starting from the north, we have the Modoc, the Lassen, the Plumas, the Tahoe, and the Inyo National Forests overlap both water board regions. The Forest Service manages approximately 15% of the lands within the Lahontan region. Looking at total land area, there are nearly 30 million acres in regions 5 and 6 that come under either BLM or Forest Service administration, accounting for approximately 50% of the lands covered by the two regions. It's a fairly significant chunk of land here in California we're talking about. Next slide, please. There we go. So next we'll be talking about proposed project types to cover under this permit. In the following slides, we'll show you a bunch of photos of the project types that we want to include in this permit. And this is a place where we would appreciate any feedback from the board on project types to cover, additional things that we maybe haven't thought about in terms of project types, or things that maybe we should consider excluding from this project. Timber harvesting, a few example photos here. Vegetation manipulation, which includes fuel reduction and juniper management. So both timber.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
So is the vision that these activities would be managed on a watershed basis or a forest and BLM district? And what if lands are, they're both BLM and Forest Service lands in the same watershed?
We are still figuring these things out. I'll touch on some of that a little bit when we talk about the programmatic approach that we're looking at, though I do think that we would probably enroll the Forest Service and the BLM as separate entities under this permit, so the BLM and Forest Service would not necessarily have to join forces to do assessments together. But we'll talk about the scale at which we're going to look at assessing watershed conditions and pollution a little further down the road.
Okay.
Currently, timber harvest and vegetation management are regulated under a timber waiver, and we anticipate that the best management practices and conditions imposed in the timber waiver would be included in the new non-point source permit, and federal agencies would no longer need to enroll in the timber waiver. That timber waiver would still exist and stand for other entities conducting timber harvest and vegetation management in our region. Let's see, next slide. We'll be looking at road maintenance slide here, the first slide showing some muddy roads for Victorville. Are you guys with us in Victorville? Just wanted to make sure nods. Yes, okay. Native surface roads can be a major source of sediment delivery to water courses. Native surface road management will be included in the permit. This includes road maintenance. Next slide. Road abandonment. Next slide. Road upgrades. Next slide. Post-fire logging, also known as salvage logging, is another project type under consideration, as is, next slide, post-fire stabilization and recovery. We'll need to click once or twice here on this slide. Show a couple photos of hydro seeding and aerial mulching. Next slide, we show watercourse crossings. Replacing or upgrading watercourse crossings is another project type considered for inclusion. Next slide, watershed and meadow restoration. In the federal permit, we hope to include a general 401 water quality certification that will streamline permitting for smaller culvert and watercourse crossing replacement and small-scale watershed restoration and bank stabilization. We probably can't include the full breadth of larger restoration projects under this permit, as those can be fairly complex and require their own special level of evaluation, but we do hope to include a general 401 to streamline permitting for these smaller projects and these road and watercourse crossing upgrades that are really important for the landscape. Next slide, we have off-highway vehicle use. And next slide, please. We have grazing. These are the last two types of activities that we're likely want to include in this permit. Next slide. Here we have additional activities potentially covered. As we're still in the beginning phases of this permit development, there are some activities that we're evaluating for inclusion. Next slide. Activities not covered. This permit won't do everything, right? So there's certain activities that either are regulated through other programs, are related to land use planning, or have limited environmental impacts, and those we would not include in this permit. Next slide. Next, I'm going to discuss the alternative approaches to project implementation that have been considered for this permit. Next slide. So we're on slide 24 for Victorville. The first approach is what I'm calling a project-by-project enrollment. And this implementation strategy is very similar to how both our current timber waiver and how the North Coast federal waiver functions. And it's sort of how we normally issue permits. These are the typical steps that often occur in the project-by-project process. The permittee develops their project. The Water Board is often notified through NEPA scoping. We write comments. Then the permittee provides enrollment paperwork to us, an application, environmental documents, supporting documents. And there may be some back and forth on that level. Then the project is enrolled in a permit. The permittee implements the project. They conduct monitoring and reporting to the Water Board. And ultimately, the project is terminated. Next slide. So there are many interactions between the permittee and the Water Board with the project-by-project enrollment. And this is an effective approach that's protective of water quality. However, it's very labor-intensive. It's also heavy on paperwork that must be passed between the permittee and the Water Board and requires significant staff time for both the permittee and the Water Board to review that and comment on documents and submit documents. Click. And so when approaching this federal permit, the question of workload came up. And would a permit of this type function for the Water Board and the federal permittees, considering the number and diversity of the projects that they conduct? And given the large land area managed by these agencies and the number of projects that have the potential to impact water quality, workload would likely increase for both agencies under a project-by-project approach. Currently, neither the water boards nor the federal agencies have the staffing required to successfully complete a project-by-project enrollment approach. Next slide. So now I'll shift to talking about the programmatic approach. This approach is the preferred approach right now for this federal permit moving forward. And it's modeled after a recently adopted Central Valley Water Board Municipal Stormwater Permit, or MS4 permit. The programmatic approach represents somewhat of a paradigm shift for the forest activities and non-point source programs. The use of the programmatic approach for the permit is another area where we would appreciate feedback from the board, as it's a departure from our standard permitting method. So we're trying to think outside the box here a little bit, get creative. The programmatic approach makes a shift towards identifying desired water quality outcomes and designing specific actions to achieve those water quality actions or water quality outcomes at a landscape scale. The objective is to better target water quality problems through strategic prioritization of water quality issues, addressing the highest priority issues first, and then moving on from there. The permittees would be held accountable for achieving specific measurable milestones and goals that they would put into a plan that is approved by the board. So we would approve the permit, and then the third step in the permit, we'll discuss in a minute, would be coming back to the board for approval of a plan to implement work and achieve these outcomes. There are many details to be worked out. We're still in the beginning stages. Things changed gears from looking at a project-by-project approach to this new programmatic approach. But we feel that it's an implementable path forward that could work for all the agencies involved and be protective of water quality. Next slide. Here are listed the steps in the framework for the programmatic approach. We have assessment, prioritization, development of a management plan, implementation, effectiveness assessment and reporting, and adaptive management. I'm going to go into each of these steps in more detail in the coming slides. Next slide. So the first step in the programmatic approach is assessment of non-point source activities and watershed conditions. The permittee will use available data to evaluate where the largest water quality threats or issues are. The information used for this assessment will pull from a broad assortment of existing information, including 303D lists, basin plans, endangered species listings, special studies, and data sources, existing data sources from both federal and state databases. The assessment would likely determine if there are specific locations or project types that tend to have more water quality issues associated with them. The Water Board staff will work closely with the Forest Service and BLM through the assessment phase to determine at what scale assessments should be made, whether looking at the region as a whole, a forest-by-forest assessment approach, or perhaps by activity. So we have yet to determine some of these details. Next slide. We're going to talk prioritization. The permittee is going to take the list of the water quality issues, locations, and pollutants affecting the receiving waters compiled during this assessment step, and then prioritize them for work. So one of the key concepts of this entire permitting approach is that due to limited resources, not all water quality problems can be addressed at once or in a short time period. So the work will be prioritized to look at the biggest issues affecting an area first. The BLM and the Forest Service manage millions of acres of public land with limited staffing and limited resources, and their resources may change with administration to administration, so we need to look at an approach that's going to be effective over the long term. Water Board staff believes that the water quality would be best served by having permittees target the resources towards the more serious water quality issues first. Next slide. This is the development phase or in the framework. After assessment and prioritization is complete, a water quality management work plan to address the water quality issues and protect water bodies is developed. We're currently calling it a water quality management plan, but that name might change. It's essentially a multi-year work plan or operating plan. So the water quality management plan would identify the milestones, activities, and best management practices that over time will result in improvement of water quality and the attainment of the water quality objectives. This water quality management plan may also include a strategy for how priorities may be shifted if there is an emergency situation such as a large wildfire. So milestones that will be included in this plan will likely be numeric or measurable in some way, with an expected date for achievement. An example of a milestone might be to conduct water quality improvements on a certain number of miles of road per year or per some time scale basis, or to replace and upgrade a certain percentage or number of culverts in a given time frame. An example of an activity might be to conduct a restoration in a particular watershed because of a threatened or endangered species listing. So with the water quality management work plan, staff recommends that the permittee submit a reasonable assurance analysis. And this analysis would show that the permittee's proposed strategies and activities will succeed in improving water quality or protecting high quality waters, and that the permittee has the resources to implement the plan. So similar to the Central Valley Water Board's permit approach that this is modeled after, staff would want this water quality management plan brought to and approved by the board. This will allow for greater accountability in the process. The exact time scale for how frequently such a water quality management plan would be brought for the board is not yet set. We're thinking it may be every 5 years. It could be longer on a 5 to 10 year basis. Next slide. This is the implementation. Once the work plan is approved by the board, the permittee begins to implement that plan. Next slide. Effectiveness assessment and reporting. The goal of the effectiveness assessment is to track the progress of the water quality management plan in achieving the identified short-term and long-term milestones. So this assessment, effectiveness assessment, might include management questions and metrics that were used in the assessment, what data was collected and how it was collected to conclude if milestones were met. We anticipate that there will be some sort of annual reporting to the Water Board on the progress of implementing the work plan. And let's see, the major goal of the effectiveness assessment is that the permittee reflects back on the work that's been completed and makes a determination whether they are moving in the direction of achieving these milestones in the most effective way possible. Next slide. We are on slide 33. This is the last phase of the programmatic framework is adaptive management. In this step, the permittee has the opportunity to modify their work plan to ensure that the approach is effective over the long term. And the adaptive management step provides a feedback loop to improve BMP implementation and address deficiencies identified in the effectiveness phase. Next slide. We see multiple benefits to the programmatic approach. One of the goals of implementing the programmatic structure will be a reduction in paperwork and workload over the long term. I do want to acknowledge that initially, there will be some heavy lifting and potentially temporarily increased workload for all the agencies to conduct the assessment, prioritization, and water quality management plan development. But once this plan is developed and improved, there should be a decrease in staff time and paperwork for all the agencies for many years to come. This framework represents a strategic, prioritized approach to water quality management so that the worst or largest impacts are addressed first. The framework also represents a long-term planning approach, which is appropriate for federal land management agencies, that will build off existing policies and monitoring protocols and augment those protocols where deficiencies are identified. Water Board staff recognize that degradation of water quality on federal lands has occurred over many decades, and there are certain widespread issues and concerns, such as legacy roads, that may take a decade or more to address. We hope that this permit will provide a pathway to reducing discharges from non-point source activities, and that it will provide regulatory certainty for many ongoing activities on federal lands. This permit, however, will not preclude federal agencies from needing to obtain other permits, such as construction stormwater permits or 401 water quality certification for larger or more complex restoration projects or activities that cannot be covered under the general 401 that will be included. Next slide. Looking forward here, ideally, this will be a 2-year process that will include public outreach, stakeholder meetings, developing an environmental document, and bringing the permit before the board for adoption in 2019. This may actually be an optimistic schedule, and some of that depends on how much stakeholder involvement we get and how the environmental review process goes. We anticipate beginning broad public notification and outreach in the coming weeks and anticipate holding public workshops late in 2017. And of course, we will have periodic updates to the board so that you're aware of what we are doing. And these will be through both executive officer reports and additional board briefings. And with that, I'll conclude my presentation. And that we would appreciate any feedback on this programmatic approach, project types, the scope or scale to conduct these assessments, and our path forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much for an excellent presentation. Are there any questions or comments, Ms. Cox?
No, thank you, but I would request before we go on to the next item that we take a couple minutes and try to tune in the audio. We have several members in the audience, and it's very challenging to hear the speaker.
I'm pretty close to the microphone as it is, but we'll try to speak more clearly.
Any questions or comments, Mr. Diaz?
Yes, thank you. On the previous slide where we addressed the 2018 environmental impact report, do we envision one single EIR or one for each type of programmatic project?
We are hoping to prepare one EIR for the permit. So the EIR would cover the scope of the entire permit, which will include all the activities and project types that we discussed. And we are hoping that this will be a joint in doc for region both region 5, Water Board region 5, and Water Board region 6. So that we can sort of streamline and have efficiencies with producing that environmental document. That it's another benefit to collaborating with the Central Valley Water Board and developing a similar permit with similar activities is that we hope to produce one environmental analysis document.
Is there also a requirement for NEPA documents?
We do not think so at this point. The NEPA would likely come as the federal entities develop their projects and implement their projects, but this permit, being that it is not a project in and of itself for the federal entities, however, that issue has been raised with the legal counsels of both the Forest Service and the BLM, so there will be some continued discussion on this, but at this point, we do not think that it will need to also be a NEPA document. That said, we could produce an EIR that would meet the needs, perhaps, of NEPA. So.
Thank you, Lori. No more questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. Could I just ask one quick question for clarification? Do I understand correctly when you say the permit? There'd be a separate permit for both federal agencies, or?
Well, we're hoping to have both federal agencies under one permit. There might be separate reporting, and for each federal agency would produce their own reporting and management plan documents. But we're hoping that the one permit for the Lahontan region will include both the federal entities. And again, some of this gets into when we get into the details, and are the same best management practices applicable and appropriate on BLM lands and forested lands? And so as we dive in the details, we'll know more, but we hope that they will both be able to enroll under the same permit.
Thank you. Questions or comments, Mr. Sandell?
Have you felt that the federal agencies have had adequate staff for the effort to get this written?
Thus far, we have had good engagement from Forest Service staff. They have been able to provide hydrologists from many of the national forests to participate in the core working group meetings. We have had slightly less engagement and involvement with BLM staff, though we have had a BLM staff person attending most of the core working group meetings and attending at the executive level meetings. So the BLM has significantly less resources and personnel than the Forest Service, and has had a bit higher turnover at their state office. So thus far, it's moving forward pretty well with federal resources.
We're not going to be in a situation where we get to almost conclusion and we find that the upper office of, say, the BLM didn't quite realize what the guys were agreeing to and decide they don't want to do it or want to change it a lot.
We are taking steps to avoid that happening. I would say that was one of the impetus for having this executive level meeting that we had in February, where we had executive level management from both the Forest Service and the BLM present, so that they could brief their higher up leadership as well. But so we have been engaging with both the Forest Service regional office in Vallejo and the BLM state office in Sacramento, who are the executive level management for the state of California.
Are you having regular meetings with everybody?
We have only had one executive level meeting, but we did at that meeting agree to having at least semi-annual meetings of executive management, and potentially more frequently as we approach certain milestones in the development. And then the core working group will probably end up meeting maybe every 2 to 3 months throughout the year to get into the nuts and bolts as we get into writing the permit.
Well, this is really, you know, it'll be a revolution as how we handle all of this, if you can get it done.
Yeah,
there's
certainly uncertainties, and so it is critical that we have executive level and leadership buy-in as we go down the road. And thus far we've had that. We hope that continues, and we're certainly working with Patty and the executive level management from the federal agencies to try and avoid any sort of late in the game fallout.
I had a couple of ideas for, but they're really premature.
To present now
is really, you know, getting down in the weeds already, and I can see we're not there yet.
That's okay. So, you know, we need to keep the weeds in mind as we move forward and how this thing is going to look. So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll bring them up probably at a later date.
Okay. Yes. We certainly appreciate feedback on all levels, high level or in the weeds, or different ways to approach this framework.
Thank you.
Mr. Sandel, Patty Kuyumjan. I just wanted to add that our next meeting is this summer, and we did commit the executive team that you requested about. And then we said we might meet again once the stakeholder process begins later this year, because I expect that's probably a valuable time for us to get together as executives to talk about that. The last meeting was also intentional for the executive managers of BLM and Forest Service to run this up their flagpoles to see that they do have commitment going forward, which I understand they do. And Pamela Creed and I, my Region 5 executive officer counterpart, talk on a regular basis to coordinate as we go forward. So, it's a good effort. It's, I think, a bit scary for everyone because it's new and different. But sometimes better things come from new and different.
Thank you. Questions or comments, Mr. Jardine?
Just a quick comment. I think for the sake of efficiency, as we look out, you know, 10, 20, 50 years, you know, this appears to be the right approach if done properly.
Thank you.
Thank you for your hard work.
Yeah. Dr. Horn.
Thank you. So I'm all in favor of developing a program where staff feels, where you feel that you're using your time wisely and effectively, and not just generating reams of paper for the sake of generating reams of paper. So I'm generally in favor of the programmatic approach as opposed to the project-by-project approach. This is incredibly ambitious and complicated. And it's hard for me to get my mind wrapped around it, and I'm sure as you guys have been wrestling with the details, you're far more aware of that than I am. I'm not convinced that every activity that you mentioned is appropriate for this programmatic approach.
Okay.
In some cases it's because simply I don't know what the issues are, the water quality issues related to, say, so maybe you could answer my questions about that. So what are the issues related to utility corridors?
Utility corridors undergo a lot of management, including vegetation management, timber harvest. Sometimes there's applications of pesticides, herbicides. Often utility corridors need to be maintained or addressed during sort of adverse conditions when the roads to get there may not be in very good drivable shape.
Oh, okay.
Because there's the big storm, the utility lines come down, the utility companies need to get out there under emergency conditions, so there can be road and access related issues, and as well as vegetation management and timber harvest. We have considered for a while adding utility companies as a specific category under our timber waiver. Also in discussions with Forest Service hydrologists, they stated that they often have a hard time holding the utility companies to the things that they would like to see on their lands. The utility companies have easements across federal lands to manage their corridors. And so it was actually the last core working group meeting, some of the hydrologists brought up that this might help leverage their relationship with the utility companies to have better water quality management results through these corridors.
That's interesting. How about OHV?
OHV use can really vary depending on the landscape and the proximity to water. And some OHV areas do not have a lot of water resources in them, but many do. Some of the OHV issues are with unrestricted access or people accessing outside of designated off-highway vehicle areas where people are just driving all over the landscape. Talking to some of the federal agencies, they have limited resources to go out and chase people down or things like that. So that's one where we're going to be looking at really we need to look at the nexus to water quality. Where do OHV trails cross water courses? Where do they parallel water courses? There can be significant amounts of erosion or destabilization of banks having motorcycles or off-highway cars just rolling down stream banks and back up the other side. And so managing sort of the crossings and the proximity to water courses, helping the federal agencies relocate some of these trails away from sensitive resources. Oftentimes the easiest place to drive is right down the middle of the gully or right down the middle of the wash. So, and in some instances in the desert, that may actually be the most appropriate place for vehicles to drive, so they're not destroying sensitive vegetation that can take so long to grow.
Right.
So, and that's one of those issues where the differences between BLM lands and Forest Service lands is going to come into play, where we hope that we can put them all under one permit, but the differences in their landscapes may be such that the same best management practices don't apply. And maybe we'll have call-outs or certain, obviously we have a long region that traverses multiple landscapes and watersheds. The Modoc Plateau is so different from the Mojave. Mm-hmm. And so there may be some places where if you're north of certain line, these are the BMPs that you should implement. And if you're south in the desert, there's a different set of BMPs. So,
complicated. Yes. How would the water quality management plan be different from a time scheduled order?
That is a question. I'm not well versed in time schedule orders. I might need to call on someone else to address that. Maybe Doug Cushman.
Hi, Doug Cushman, senior engineer, heading up the non-point source unit here in the Lahontan office in the Tahoe. So can you rephrase your question again, just so I make sure I answer it?
The question is, how would the water quality management plan be different from a time schedule order? You talked about milestones, having milestones and things like that, so that sounds kind of like a time schedule order.
Very similar, although I think the time schedule, the recognizing our interaction between the water board and the federal entities and some of the supremacy clauses and our ability to regulate federal entities in California as a state against relative to the federal government, time schedule orders provide more pathways for forcing compliance and punitive levying punitive judgments by the board if noncompliance becomes an issue. Using this, the general permit we're talking about here with the water quality management plans associated with them, that would require, if noncompliance became an issue, it would require a separate action by the board to subsequently associate a time schedule order to that noncompliance of the water quality management plan, at which point the enhanced enforcement ability of the board would be applicable.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is that the water quality management plan would not preclude using a time scheduled order if there was an area where a particular problem arose.
Correct, and that would be the board's discretion to direct staff or for staff to try and work through the lowest enforcement levels possible. And if it seems like noncompliance continues to be an issue relative to a water quality management plan, that if it's just not working,
Right. Then
there's room for staff or the board to go to the time schedule order approach.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
So I'm assuming that we have speaker cards from the Forest Service and BLM, do we? Are they, because I have a question that's better directed to the federal agencies as opposed to our staff.
At the moment, we do not.
Okay, well, I will ask that question, but before I do that. So back in the days when I worked for the Forest Service, I actually wrote a paper on, so I'm encouraged by the movement towards performance-based regulation that this includes. And as you were talking, it made me think about this paper that I wrote that actually went a little further than looking at performance as opposed to saying put a water feature here, put a fence there, telling people how to manage the land, being prescriptive like that, included incentives and disincentives. What I proposed is not feasible without an act of Congress. So, because it involves varying the fee that people pay depending on the ecosystem condition. Mm-hmm. So that's not possible in this case. But what was really interesting about this idea was, in listening to you, I'm thinking, oh my God, this is a massive amount of basically central planning going on here. Collecting data, assessing, which is still a huge workload for staffs of all the agencies involved. And I'm just wondering if there's ways to encourage the people actually out on the landscape to be innovative, as opposed to this kind of more central planning approach. I don't know if I'm being articulate in this idea, but if there are ways that you can build in, sort of triggers that, if something happens, there's more freedom, more innovation is encouraged. If other triggers happen, less. Just to encourage people to be innovative towards, I was thinking about allotment permits, so that's a different kind of permit. But the central problem there is that, the allotment permit comes up once every 5 years or certain periods of time. And as opposed to a price signal, which can vary, very rapidly over time, this is a very clunky mechanism for, being protective of water quality. And so I was arguing in this paper to just to kind of have a quasi price and then let the permittee figure out the best way and be innovative to create the ecosystem condition that the agency was looking for. So I just, and I will actually provide you with copies of my paper if you're interested.
Sure.
The price signal isn't going to work here, but I'm just wondering if there are concepts in there that might be useful as you go forward.
We hope that nothing in this permit would discourage innovation or sort of proactive management on the ground. And of course, we still have, through the non-point source program, grant opportunities through the 319 grant or other Prop 1, perhaps Prop 84. I'm not sure that there's any funding left for that. But there are, you know, grant opportunities that we have put out there for range management and ranch management. And so, separate from this permit, those grant opportunities will still exist. The Water Board will still promote those to help.